You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of March 27th. I'm John Gibson, and on a Sunday night is my brother, my partner, and my baseball buddy who's back from Miami, Jim Allen. How you doing, man? Mr. World Baseball Classic writer.
I'm still coming down from a transformational high.
There's no need to come down. You just stay up there. I'll shout down from here.
It was hard. I'll tell you. It was between the semifinal win over Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I'm just getting over my jet lag. I arrived in Miami on Friday, March 17th in the evening.
On your birthday.
Right. Thank you. And I went to practice the next day, and I'm still jet lagged, and it's hard to sleep. And then the 19th is the U.S. The U.S. Cuba semifinal, and I'm finally getting out of it. And then okay, and now by the 21st is a normal day. We're getting into normal hours now, because until that time there were a bunch of teams in the competition and people were at the stadium early. But I figure I can sleep in and things are going to be normal. But when Japan won the semifinal on Munetaka Murakami's RBI double, it was like it's not like I couldn't sleep, but I kept waking up to look at Twitter to see something else about the game that I watched. I was so jazzed.
Just a writer. Imagine the players.
I know. And I got like 4 hours sleep that day, and I'm thinking, oh, this is getting worse. And then the day before the final, I've got to leave early in the morning. So I didn't sleep well, but I've got to get up. I've got to, you know, get something to eat. I've got to buy my gifts for coming back to Japan, because, you know, I'm too Japanese.
And, thank you. You're welcome. John appreciates it.
I know you do. You didn't even have to say thank you. So I'm doing all that stuff. And then, of course, then is the final. And I finish work at 1:30 and get back to the hotel about 2 in the morning. And I've just got to make sure absolutely 100% everything, all the documentation, everything's ready, everything's packed, ready to go in the morning. I had 90 minutes of sleep, and I almost missed my shuttle to the airport. And of course, I'm still jazzed. And I'm jazzed the whole flight, and I'm jazzed in Chicago when I'm waiting for my flight back to Tokyo. And I get back to Japan, and I'm still jazzed. And I'm like, it's just been wild. And then I caught a cold on the plane coming back, so that took a little of the edge off, but I'm still pumped.
Oh, well, good. And like I said, you're just an observer. Imagine the players and just what kind of high they're still riding. But it just was a great WBC. It's a great World Baseball Classic championship by Japan. It was a great tournament overall, and I think we'll get into it as we talk about it a little bit more. But I think everybody has to be happy with the performances they put on, even the teams that lost at the points that at which they lost. It wasn't that you know, well, we expected a little bit more, or we could have done this, or we could have done that. They just, I think the probably the prevailing thoughts after their losses were, well, that's part of baseball. We played really well, and we're proud of what we did here. And I just don't think there were. I mean, even the Czech team, the Czech Swings, I like to call them, a bunch of dentists and firemen and teachers, I believe, and the electrician so well and represented themselves so well in Tokyo.
The electrical engineer who strikes out Shohei Ohtani, how good is that?
Right. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, actually on this week's show, we've got a little bit of a chat with Lars Nootbaar of Samurai Japan and the St. Louis Cardinals. And we're going to talk to Mike Piazza. I got a little bit from his presser. He was the Italy manager. We're going to look at Japan's WBC championship run, talk about the elephant in Yokohama, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so there's just samurai fever nationwide. It is just beautiful. you got to see it in person. Most of us watched it on TV. And before we actually hit the record button tonight, I was telling you that I thought that that strikeout to end the WBC, that last at bat between Ohtani and Mike Trout, had to be the most watched live baseball strikeout in the history of the game. It was watched worldwide, and I'm sure even the losing teams and losing countries wanted to see that showdown at the end. And
oh, yeah.
We all got to witness it, and we're sitting there salivating, and of course Ohtani's throwing 100+, and then that slider he finished off Mike Trout with, even if he was sitting on a slider, had he been sitting on that, I don't think he hits that ball anyway. Just fantastic. And then I was joking that in the at-bat, because it was mostly fastball and slider, right? But then I said after the at-bat, Ohtani also threw the glove ball and he threw the hat ball. So he threw everything but the kitchen sink. How did you enjoy the whole run from Tokyo to Miami of the Japanese team?
Well, the on a personal note, getting COVID-19 during the Tokyo round was probably a bit of a low.
I saw.
I'll tell you a couple of things, highlights. Well, first of all, so I didn't get to write any of the games. I wrote the first game, the China-Japan game, mm-hmm. and I wrote the last pool game, and then I wrote the Italy quarterfinal. But I did go to the, but I wasn't at the dome except for the first practice and the first game against China. And the first game against China, the probably one of the high points of that day was getting a chance to talk to Sadaharu Oh. I hadn't talked to him for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and ask him about what he thought about Tommy Edman playing for Korea and his Cardinals teammate Lars Nootbaar playing for Japan, because like them, he has, he's half Japanese.
Right.
And he Which said,
a lot of us fail to remember, or some of us don't even know. Yeah.
Well, his father is from mainland China and his mother's from Toyama Prefecture, which is kind of like Japan, although it's different, having lived in Toyama Prefecture. But anyway, it is different. Anyway, so he said, I just wish them the best. And I'm just so proud of the reception that Japanese people are giving these people who want to honor their heritage and play for their mother's homelands in this tournament. And, and how exciting this is. And so I got that, and I was going to write about it. My colleague on my day job said, no, just keep it for something else. And so I wrote about it in my newsletter. But then on the 18th in Miami, I got a chance to talk to Lars Nootbaar first time since I got sick. And I told him what O said, and he was blown away. He was like, I got chills. That gives me chills. He said, I don't know what to say. I'm like speechless, because he wanted to meet him and it didn't happen.
Right.
And he was just floored. And I thought, wow.
For the record, what was the line that gave?
Well, he told me, I'm trying to do it from memory right now, but he said, I think it's great that these two guys, they're both playing hard, and there's nobody in Japan who's, saying anything bad about having having a half American guy batting leadoff for the national team that he's accepted is a huge thing. And moving forward, it's great for baseball, and I hope that they both do really well.
Yeah, and that, that was my big thing, is I thought, I heard an interview the other night. Of course, Hideki Kuriyama has been making the rounds on TV.
He has indeed.
He's here. And one of the things he said in the recent interview was that he was looking for some help, because that was a kind of a position of need, center field.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was a kind of a situation, right place, right person, right time, that Nootbaar came along. So, it wasn't like Japan didn't need that player, mm-hmm. and we joked, I believe, at the beginning of the WBC, and we're like, well, if your grandmother knows somebody who lived in Japan, you can play for the Japanese team. You just needed a drop of Japanese blood somewhere in the system, and you were good. But this is legitimate because he's half, and his mother, Lars' mother, was here in Japan, and she was visiting. She was attending all the games, and even went to Miami and attended games over there. So this was no,
Well, it's more strict than that. Since day one of the WBC, the rules, the eligibility rules are: if you are eligible to file for citizenship in a country the day the tournament starts.
Right.
Either through whatever rules of that country.
Sure.
So for Israel, if you're Jewish, that makes you eligible.
Right.
Because every Jew has a right to file for citizenship in Israel. So,
gotcha.
So Hideki Kuriyama also wanted Steve Kwan,
right,
but he wasn't eligible because his grandmother was born in Japan, not his mother. So that's not, you can't be, he needed your parent. You have to be born in Japan. So, they could get Dave Roberts if he still wanted to play.
That would help. He can play center. He was a center. He could
do something. Right? So that was that. So every country's rules are different. Some, as Wayne Grassick famously said out during the first WBC, that the requirement for Italy was that you've eaten a pizza.
We love you, Wayne. We love you, buddy. All right. Well, let's do the interview. Let's get into that real quick, and then we'll talk about Samurai Japan, and then we'll move along. So just before pool play started on March 9th at Tokyo Dome, I caught up with Lars Nootbaar as a throng of reporters surrounded him after his batting practice. And then the day before the Italy game, March 15th, I was at Mike Piazza's presser and had a question for him that has actually bothered me for decades. And I know
what has bothered you for decades other than me?
It hasn't been decades that you bothered me. It's only been instances within the decades.
Oh, okay. So, what that tells you is that I'm inconsistent.
No, it tells you that we're not together all the time.
Okay.
You're consistent, baby. Don't worry about it.
Okay, good. You had me worried there. I feel like I was not fulfilling my duties or something.
Oh, your duties are four-filled and five-filled.
That's inflation.
So, I asked him this question. I'm not sure that Mike Piazza answered the question, but he did give an answer. And Nootbaar they were calling him Tachan because his middle name is Tatsuji, and they just went with Tachan. So he was a very popular figure, I believe, throughout the entire run for Japan in this tournament. But he was certainly popular coming off the field that day. So this first portion is a little bit of a scrum. And you'll hear our buddy Jason Koskri ask questions, and you hear some of the international press guys answer questions. And then you can tell there's a change in the atmosphere, and Mike Piazza is speaking, and I ask him a question. And then another, I think an MLB.com reporter asks a question, and he answers
Michael
that.
So Clare.
Yeah. Okay, Michael Clare. Thank you for that. So let's take a listen.
And uniform instead of the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's awesome. Obviously, it's awesome wearing Cardinals too, but, to be able to represent, Japan out here, being the Tokyo Dome for the first time ever, representing Japan, pretty surreal experience. It still hasn't really hit me yet, but it's pretty awesome.
How'd this whole process play out for you to end up being on the Japan team?
Yeah, actually, Ipe, Shohei's interpreter in the States, who's mine here.
Know him well.
Yeah, he kind of hit me up on Instagram, said, give me a call whenever you get a chance. Asked me what my interest was. I told him, I'm all in if possible. And then, background checks, everything like that, had to clear. But for my end, it was always a yes. But he's the one that first initially reached out.
So it started on Instagram.
Wow. Yeah. Just like a lot of relationships now.
High tech.
That's how everything starts.
Have you gotten the chance to, obviously you're in this unique position with Japan, and your teammate Tommy is in the same kind of unique position with Korea, and it's just pretty cool.
cool.
Yeah, yeah, no, it really is. And it was nice for me too. I mean, I'm sure for him, but being able to, you know, bounce up back and forth, you know, talk about, you know, what he's feeling, what he knows, you know, everything like that. So to have somebody else kind of going through it, coming out here too, kind of calms your nerves a little bit.
What was the reaction to your family in Japan when they heard that you were going to play?
Oh, they were, yeah. It was just pure joy. You know, they're proud. It's cool for me too to be able to do that for them. You know, I don't get to talk to them very often. I don't get to see them very often. So for me to be able to, you know, kind of connect me and my family together from opposite sides of the world, pretty special moment for me.
What's that?
They're not here yet, but I think that they'll be getting here soon. Obviously, my mom's side of the family lives here, so they're here, but my parents, they'll be coming soon.
This is a reporter from Korea. As you said, did you send any messages to Tommy after you came here?
Yeah, we've been talking a little back and forth with each other. Obviously, he had games earlier, I had games later, so we haven't really seen each other yet, but we've been texting each other, and we were talking before we got here. Just a little friendly competition, you know. We were just going back and forth with each other, but obviously, Tommy's a great friend, great teammate of mine. So, yeah, we texted each other a little bit.
Do you understand what it means,
the
Korea versus Japan?
Yeah, so I didn't really know exactly what it was, but I'm starting to understand what it is now. And, you know, so the banter, you know, back and forth between me and Tommy means a little bit more now, too.
So I always ask international guys when they play in Japan about the possibility of them playing here in the future, and how has that crossed your mind here since you've been here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the goal for me is obviously to, you know, play in the major leagues as long as possible. But if that's something that, you know, end of the career or anything like that, I would love to absolutely play here at some point in my career. The welcome I've gotten, everything about it, you know, playing, you know, in front of my mom's side of the family, that'd be really special for me. So it's been awesome so far.
How's been the process of like joining the team and kind of getting to know the guys, and since you've gotten here?
Same as any other team, you know, really. You know, I didn't really know obviously anybody coming in. It was nice having Yu Darvish, you know, kind of being able to speak fluently with me, and Ipe being a Shohei's translator. That kind of eased me into two of like the captains, you could say, on the team. And then Seiya Suzuki was huge. You know, he was obviously not here right now, but he reached out to a lot of the guys before I came out. And, you know, he said some nice things and told them to take care of me, and that they have. So I'm really appreciative to him.
How do you feel that you got a lot of, you know, Japanese baseball fans? You got it?
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome, you know, and it's one of those things that, you know, I don't even think it's real yet. You know, it's crazy when, you know, the fact that they're calling me my nickname already and doing all that. And that was what was nice for me. His first day they were wearing my shirt. And so that was pretty cool, you know, accepting me and the family a little bit there.
You got some hits against Hanshin. You got some hits against the Orix. What do you think about getting your timing against these Japanese pitchers?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. You know, their windups aren't as, I guess I'm not used to them, you know, those kind of windups. But it's been good. What's also nice is right now there's no pitch clock, so I don't have to worry about that right now either. You know, I don't have to worry about two things at once, you know, walking and chewing gum is tough for me. So, you know, trying to time them up is already tough enough. So, you know, it's been a little bit of a challenge, but something that obviously, you know, I'm going to have to adjust to.
Let's ask the tough question. How's your Japanese? Let's try it.
It's tough.
I remember
tough.
I saw on TV, Ohayou gozaimasu.
Ohayou gozaimasu. Yeah, I'm trying to get some deals out here. So, you know, I can say, you know, hello, my name is Lars, and then whatever, you know, whatever brand wants me after, I could just say the brand after. So, but yeah, no, the guys have helped me out a little bit, but their English has been great too. So what's really nice for me is that they're, you know, they're trying their best English-wise, and I keep telling them I got to speak Japanese. I'm in their country, so, you know, I got to do that, but it's been awesome.
You have some really talented guys on the Japanese squad. Who's kind of stood out to you other than the guys from the major leagues?
Yeah, obviously, you know, Murakami, obviously. He was going backside last night. Roki hitting 103. Yamamoto blowing it up with that splitter, too. I mean, we got a lot of guys on here that are, I think, ultimately going to be playing over in the States. It's a really impressive roster. We've got a lot of really impressive arms and bats, too. So, defensively, too, again, like, good lineup. Good staff, so been very, very impressed.
How much did you know about these guys before you came?
I knew a decent amount about the guys that that I just mentioned. There's big league teams that are already interested in these guys, and My mom's a big Japanese baseball fan too, so she knows a lot about it. So she was kind of giving me a heads up about that too.
Are you using Ohtani's bat? This long bat right here is his.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Just a little practice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then if I get some of his power by touching his bat, that's that kind of too.
What about this graphite one?
Yeah.
These ones are just like heavy, just different weights that I use for training and stuff.
So you don't use a Shohei's bat tomorrow?
No. Maybe I'll sneak one. Who knows? But
using the Chandler's.
This year. This is the first year that I started using them. Switching between them and another company too. So, not solely with Chandler yet.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi, John Gibson with the Japan News, and look like you should still be out there playing. get a couple swings in. You had that relationship with Hideo Nomo. You came to Japan, I believe, to play before with the touring teams, and you did a commercial in which you spoke the words "just meat."
Yes.
And since then, I think the Japanese and the Japanese media have maybe mischaracterized how that term was used. And for me, I remember it from the 80s as being a pitch that's right there to hit. But how did you mean it? And did you realize how much that took after you left? Because it's still part of Japanese vernacular.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yes, I was very fortunate that Hideo gave me that praise, and fortunate to have those, Komatsu, which was the company, include me in that campaign. I was told when it was first produced that some words in Japanese-style English don't translate in a particular way. So it maybe to a native English speaker, it wouldn't sound quite in the same text or the way the context it was meant. So, but I found that kind of charming, actually. I didn't really find it confusing. So I enjoyed that success, and a couple of trips I came here just as a tourist and doing a few appearances with Hideo, and it was really a lot of fun. So I can't believe it's been since 2000 when we opened up here with the Mets the last time I was here. So, but I'm excited. I look forward to coming back again with my family now that I have children, and they're very much into Japanese culture and the things that are here. So my daughter said I have to get her very good face cream because they have good face cream there. So I have to do that today. With pearls and things in it. So no, I think it's a wonderful country, and it was an honor for me to do those things here. And it's very flattering people remember it as well. So I'm very honored. And again, hopefully going to the game tomorrow, we will have success. Thank you.
Hey, Mike. Mike Clare from MLB.com. So kind of to talk about that a little bit. So this tournament has seen Great Britain win, has seen Czech win, has seen you guys advance and Australia advance. What is the level of competition and play in Europe, and how is this experience going to help the Italian-based players in the future and if things like this fall's European Championships?
Well, I think we wanted to bring awareness that there's a lot of room for improvement in Europe. Major League Baseball does the London Series, which is an exciting event. But as far as true player development, it's not what we need. And I think baseball in Italy the last 20 years hasn't been in its best self. And the only way to improve that is to bring Italians, American Italians of Italian heritage back and have them reconnect with their heritage to grow players from Europe, Italy specifically, because it's not just Italy, it's European. It's a continental thing. It's not just Italy. Yes, Italy is where I live and my heritage, and it's something we enjoy, but there's also a movement of baseball. I mean, I've been coaching in Italy since 2007, two European championships in Stuttgart and Rotterdam, and obviously with the Dutch and the Germans getting better and the Czechs getting better, that's a great story, but we need to keep it going, and we need to encourage investment and pragmatic investment and little, as I said, regional academies, regional development, but also I think we also need a home in Europe. And that's one of our main long-term goals. It's not going to be easy. And then for us, we are now encouraging Italian players to go to school, colleges, and high school for that matter in the U.S. to play baseball. They don't have to play for the top teams, but just to go play, because the one big thing that Asian teams, that American teams, that Latin American teams have is they play more games, and in Europe they don't. So in my opinion, that's going to be the best long-term potential for success to develop European players. I mean, there's a few, but I think it's still relatively untapped, and that's hopefully we can do that.
All right, so that's kind of, you know, you hear, and I say you, but a lot of times we watch TV programs and they portray the press as this frenzied group of people barking questions over each other at an individual. And it's just not that way. And you guys get to hear what a real media scrum is like. I wouldn't say it's very, very organized. I got to ask two or three questions. You heard Jason ask a couple questions. You heard other people ask questions. But it's kind of organized. You know that you have to let other people get a question, and you can't just hog the time with the player. But I thought it was really organized, and everybody was really friendly. Even the media in large is just a great personality. And so, I don't think Mike Piazza cleared up that question about what just meat is supposed to mean. But I know that they butcher it meaning-wise in Japan. But that's all right, I guess, he says. It's good. It's charming, he says. But what did you take away from these talks?
Well, I enjoyed it. I didn't get a chance to talk to Lars that day, but we did speak a little bit here and there in Osaka, and we did speak talk a little bit on the 8th and the 9th at Tokyo Dome, and again in Miami. So I was pretty much Larsed out. But he's just a buoyant guy, and he was exactly what manager Hideki Kuriyama predicted. You know, guys are going to love him. The fans are going to dig him, and he's just going to be a ball of fire that, you know, everyone's going to be glad is on the team. And that was all true. And so I think what I enjoyed from this interview was a couple of things. One, I was close to falling out of my chair laughing when he talked about his brand, you know, and his future as a brand endorser. So there was that. And then there was another one was when when you asked about the players he knew, and one was, you know, all the MLB teams, you know, they know Murakami and they know Yamamoto and they know Sasaki. And then there's my mom. She knows everybody. So that was just so cool. I talked to him about his mom, and he was like, his face lights up and you can see the love and affection, and you know, it's heartwarming. And yeah. And Lars is a heartwarming kind of guy, and I just really enjoyed that whole experience, and I'm glad that he could experience it.
Yeah, I won't be doing any pepper grinder things. I'm not really a big St. Louis Cardinals fan, and I bet you're not that much of a fan either. So I was not into that at all. And I'm like, you know, get something new for Japan. Don't bring something over from your team. But whatever, I mean, it worked out for Japan, and then and it caught on here, and pepper grinder sales went up and all that stuff. But it is certainly not something I want to be caught doing. And I wish they would have had something more original. That's all. You know me, I like to be original. I like to come up with great sayings or change the existing one. So it could have been something else. But anyway, I saw this interview again recently with Kuriyama, or maybe I'm conflating a couple interviews together, but he said they did want Kwan and they did want Nootbaar, and that Kuriyama talked to Nootbaar and said, man, this guy's such a good guy. I got to get him on the team. Mm. That was like the first impression that he took away from talking to Lars for the first time. So that was interesting. But I enjoyed talking to both of those guys, and you could hear in the presser with Piazza that, you know, they knew they were up against it. It was a tall task, but all these teams, as I said earlier on in the intro, that they did well. I mean, I don't think, thinking back on it, Italy was not expected to make it through pool play, got to pool play, and had a pretty good game against Japan. I mean, if not for a bad decision by a pitcher throwing away a ball on a, I believe it was the bunt, a bunt play,
mm-hmm.
that they might have been closer in the game and might have had a chance to even maybe put some runs up and really challenge Japan. But I want to talk about the whole tournament, and that's why I know that you, I tried to read it and I couldn't. I got locked out of your jballallen.com, but you kind of wrapped up the whole tournament and what it means. And I don't want you to get into everything because I know you've written about it, but can you wrap it up and tease it a little bit for people who didn't get a chance to read it?
Yes, yeah,
encourage them to read
it. It's a long series and I'm only halfway through it, actually. Well, Bob Whiting wrote something, and I think it was kind of a knee-jerk response right after the victory, because he came out with another one saying, you know, and I'll start with that. He said, "My wife was going nuts, and she hates baseball."
Mm.
And it was all about, you know, the emotions, and it was all about the real feelings. But the first one was an analytical Robert Whiting piece about don't get too high about the WBC. It's got, you know, it's just an exhibition. It's a series of exhibitions that is nothing more than a series of exhibitions, which in my mind is what I would call bullshit.
Hashtag high heat.
Because an exhibition is a game in which people care less about the outcome than they do about the process.
Correct. That's why I call it big baseball. Yes.
Yeah. So, but the other arguments was, you know, he did make a couple of other arguments that were valid. One is, it's really important that Japan not be too busy patting itself on the back, because this ain't going to change nothing in itself.
Right.
And Japan has a lot of things it can fix. Of course, then Bob went into his comparison with MLB and said, you know, MLB has moved on to be that in the early 70s, NPB and MLB were essentially per team were on the same level of revenue.
Okay.
But since then, MLB's, you know, gone, has visited Mars, and NPB is still looking for Cupertino. Or I should say, they're looking for Saitama Prefecture from Tokyo. And, you know, they're on the train, stuck on the local train. And but he made it sound like that was MLB was just so adventurous, as opposed to getting kicked in the ghoulies by an arbitrator that robbed them of their right to pay players whatever they want and never lose them.
Right.
In the reserve clause, well, that destroyed, they had their business wiped out. They had to invent a new one. And Japan has been happily going on in the same outmoded business model it's had since 1950, more or less. So that's really the difference. It's Japan needs to have its business model destroyed from outside for it to catch up, maybe. But it can do it. But that was the point. You know, MLB is so good and Japan so backward. I kind of, you know, I spun that on his head. But he's not wrong. Japan does need to get its act together. And that's where those are right now. I'll be getting into another couple of blog posts in the next couple of days.
Okay. I just wanted to put some of the, because I saw a lot of things on Twitter. I saw people complaining about the pitchers being used in the final. I saw comments about Kuriyama and what he was doing. And, you know, two things about Kuriyama. I just remember him as fighter's manager, and mm-hmm. he did a lot of sitting on the bench, but he kind of did some self-soothing kind of body language motions and during his time there. So he was under a lot of stress with the fighters, and you could see it. I thought this time out with the Samurai Japan team that he was very relaxed, very poised, maybe too much so that he was not worried. He'd never really had that same kind of look to him. He just, his demeanor was excellent on the bench. And, you know, I pay attention to those things. For instance, I always notice how Bobby Valentine, no matter what bad thing was happening on the field, he never looked down, you know, and he never let his shoulders slink or slunk or slump.
I can't help you there.
Yeah, I pay attention to those things. And like I said, the body language before with the fighters Kuriyama, a lot of times he just was holding himself so that, you know, his arms are folded or crossed his arms somewhere across his body somehow to kind of hold himself up and prop himself up. And this time out, he was just relaxed. He's just watching and let it play out. And I liked the moves he made. And I wrote my story, the only story I got to write, which I was home, working from home that day, because I didn't obviously go to Miami like the big boys. I only got to go to the Tokyo portion, but and I wrote about
we call them old boys where I'm from.
Okay. And I just wrote about all those young pitchers that he put out there in a final, and that I really don't think a lot of other managers might have even contemplated that. They would have said, hey, give me my veteran guy and I'm going to ride him as long as I can, you know, and not put out 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds and 23-year-olds and a 25-year-old. No way. And then bring out a veteran to pitch as a setup guy and then bring out Ohtani as a closer. I mean, what kind of plan is that, right? But I don't think a lot of people go into games thinking that way. But he said in one of the interviews that I saw, one of the many, that he looked at the schedule and he had a plan and he knew he was going to have to use these young pitchers. They put him on a roster for a reason. He was going to put him on the mound, you know, and show faith in him, although he didn't show faith in all of them. But anyway, I think a lot of context comes with this championship. Again, I saw people talking about the fact that Japan has won 3 of the 5 WBC tournaments, and this is with Japan using a different ball and having to play the final portions of the tournament in a different country on different mounds in unfamiliar stadiums, in, you know, ostensibly a higher player-to-player basis against with their opponents. So that's true, but I think there are some advantages that Japan also brings in that maybe it could use as a caveat / springboard as to why Japan wins these tournaments. One is that the Japanese players' bodies are used to being active and more in playing shape in March than a lot of players in other countries because their February 1st camp opening. Now that's
and the attitude is different. The attitude is different in Japan.
It's not necessarily that they're playing baseball at a high level, but they're doing baseball activities. They're swinging. They're facing live pitching, so to speak, even if it's a batting practice session, and they're out in the batting cages. They're out on the field going through these activities. And I think that's a lot different from guys who are not getting together in the States. Now former Lions pitcher Zach Neale was telling us about the fact that in LA area, you could pick up baseball games. And I thought, wow, it's good, you know, living in Southern California, if you can do that. But still, I don't think that's the same. Guys playing some pickup baseball games, even if they are high level players. So I think that's an advantage for Japan. I think the kinds of pitches that the Japanese guys rely on, although I did see my buddy Aozora put out a chart that showed that Japan had thrown like the second most or second average, the second highest rate of fastballs in the tournament, or at least in the top five. But you know, the image of Japan not being able to fire the fastballs with the big boys, that's also a myth. I think they can pitch, especially the guys they brought over. When you're bringing over Sasaki and Ohtani, you're talking about guys sitting 102 for a couple innings. So they're blowing away the competition in those respects. And then again, we did have our buddy Dave, who was concerned about playing in different time zones and all that. And I said, hey, man, dudes in their 20s, they're not sleeping that much anyway. And I just don't think that that's a thing, because they can adjust very quickly, especially those young whippersnappers. So, you know, other than the fact that the U.S. team, I don't think it was that great in terms of the guys they put on the mound. And still, the U.S. really made a game of it. And I was really surprised that the U.S. kept the Japanese team down to that few number of runs, but you know, Murakami's home run came with the bases empty. Kazuma Okamoto hit a bases empty home run. So that was I wouldn't say it was luck. It just those home runs just happened to come with the bases empty, because if anybody's on, it's a four to one situation in the late innings. So anyway, Japan very organized. I think we talked about the way Japan runs itself, and it's a very organized, very let's execute the plan kind of oriented society. So I think anybody familiar with Japan knows that, and that if they probably, again, looked at the whole schedule and they had everything planned out, and I think most of it went according to plan, and except when you got Ukyo Shuto running around the bases that apparently he was clocked at 33.4 kilometers per hour when he was chasing down Ohtani to score that winning run against Mexico, but on the Murakami double. But I mean, this was just a fantastic showing. So I think, I think it's pretty fair. And we've heard talk about teams not being ready, and that this tournament should be played in the middle of the Major League Baseball season around the All-Star break. I even heard somebody say, yeah, teams can take 2 weeks off and play it then. I'm like, what kind of crazy are you?
# high heat.
Do you understand that the Steinbrenners are not going to let players release them in the middle of the season, especially because we did see a couple injuries? They're not going to let their players go out there with a pennant race. And then, let's say they're two games in front or two games in back of whomever it is in the American League East. Do you see any Yankees playing in this tournament? No. So this is the perfect time. It's the only time to play the tournament. And that just gives a natural advantage to Japan. So Japan is great. And that team has won the tournament three times. And there are some built-in advantages and there's some built-in disadvantages. But I think if you really analyze all the teams from all the countries and weigh the talent and everything, I think this is the fairest tournament you could have. And I was just happy to see the whole thing work out the way it did.
Just a couple of points. As far as the timing of the tournament, it's going to be in March for a while. You know when it'll change? Because, if you follow how MLB works, it's the MLB is like Japan, because remember after the March 2011 earthquake, the Central League said, we're going to start on time. Who cares about the Pacific League? Who cares about, death and destruction? We're good.
Right.
And the Pacific League says, no, we want to hold back. Two of our stadiums aren't ready to go. And the Central League says, who cares? And
play in the street.
It was supposed to, the season was supposed to start like the 27th of March. And it ended up starting, I think, the 10th or 12th of April. And I asked Tomio Satozaki about that just in the preseason. He says, we could have been ready to go on the first week of April. It wouldn't have been a problem. But in Japan, if you've never done something, it's impossible.
Right.
Everything you've never done.
Not just Japan, though, but yeah.
Yeah, it's impossible. It can never be done. And MLB is exactly like that. I mean, MLB was that way with interleague play. And MLB is always that way with expansion. It's impossible now. Until it's not. And the second interleague and the playoff expansion of the playoffs and whatever happens will switch from not only impossible to it's happening now, the instant MLB thinks it can make more money. There will be a real world series between Japanese teams and MLB teams the day MLB thinks we can make more money doing this. If they say, we're going to shorten the season and increase international play because, that's where the direction's headed. If it heads in that direction, it'll go from being impossible to the natural thing, the obvious thing in 0 to 60 seconds. So it isn't in July, but I wouldn't rule it out and say it's never going to be in July. It just right now, the math doesn't work that way. And for the time being, it won't work that way, but who knows? So, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Japan has an advantage in that, Japan and Korea as well, because they both start their camps on February 1st. So they're 2 weeks ahead of the rest of the world.
Right.
So,
and more if you think about getting ready for camp. So yeah.
And they're expected to be ready on day one and, you know, be able to throw a 200 pitch bullpen. So and visit the doctor and have they've got their doctor's appointments and MRIs scheduled for the next day. So so there's that. And another thing, and Japan, of course, is the finals are all the semifinals and finals are always in MLB parks, which is a disadvantage for Japan because they've never played there. They're always using MLB balls, which is a disadvantage for Japan. But on the other hand, Japanese pitchers, if you watch their games and saw how many walks Japan drew compared to their opponents in the final round, it's incredible. It's a huge discrepancy. The Japanese pitchers didn't walk anybody, and the American pitchers and the Mexican pitchers couldn't walk guys fast enough. They thought they were working for Jerry Lewis or something on Labor Day. And so sorry for the old guy reference. So there's that. But the other thing is that I think there's some truth to it that when batters and pitchers see each other for the first time, the pitchers have an advantage because they're the ones deciding what to throw.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've just got to throw their good stuff and have a plan, but the batters ain't seen it before live. And after the final, Mark DeRosa, the USA manager, said, you know, those guys were nasty. And I never would have imagined it possible that any team in this tournament could hold us to two runs.
Mm.
And Mike Trout said the same thing. Those guys were really good. Now, if we'd, you know, after the Shota Imanaga pitched two innings in the final and then Shosei Togo pitched two innings and then it was five relievers. So he said, if I'd gotten a second look at one of these guys, then it might have been different. I would have might been able to make an adjustment. But that's, you know, but those are the rules of the tournament. Everybody's got to play by the same rules. The U.S. had the same advantage. They could have done the same thing.
Right.
They chose not to. I mean, actually, that was the plan. The Americans, we knew they were going to go through a bullpen. Now, the last thing I want to say relates to Hideki Kuriyama, and you're saying he was very relaxed. I would think that, one, he evaluated the situation very, very well. He picked a team.
I'm talking about throughout the tournament, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I meant from day one of being named manager.
Okay. Sure.
He had a plan for selecting the players, and he knew, you know, if I get the best guys and everybody does what they can do, we're going to be really good. So I'm just going to let the guys do their business. And so that's one. And there was a contrast because when I watched them work out in Osaka, they had a pre warm-up game, their first official WBC practice. Mm-hmm. Samurai Japan is no longer managing this, and which is called NPB Enterprises, the subsidiary that runs the national team. It was now being organized by the World Baseball Classic. So the officials were switched out. Now it's WBC officials. And they're running the practice. And when Japan worked out indoors at the Oryx Buffaloes, remote is a good word for their practice, their minor league facility, way out on the Osaka Bay near the airport, kind of. I take that back. It's close to Universal Studios. If anybody knows where that is, I don't. But anyway, they're out there working. And what I saw was so completely different from what you see when you watch a Japanese team practice. When you watch a Japanese club practice, it's routinized. People are doing things not in lockstep, but they're doing things in groups in specific orders. It's like clockwork.
Right.
It's not crazy clockwork. It's not like, you know, like designed by a madman kind of, you know, Swiss watch kind of thing, but things happen in predictable fashion. What I saw was basically 30 guys individually or in pairs doing different things all over the place.
Hmm.
Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Hiroya Miyagi from the Oryx Buffaloes were sprinting. Lars Nootbaar was working on stuff. Shohei Ohtani was working on his stuff. Yu Darvish was working on his stuff. Masataka Yoshida was over in the corner doing curls on dumbbells. I thought that
macho,
was
a, man. Yeah.
He is that thing. So everybody was, you know, people were stretching on their own. Everybody was, it was completely individualized. It was the absolute opposite of what you expect from NPB. Okay, so that's one thing. Now, when you mentioned Kuriyama and how he looked so relaxed, I think he made a calculated decision. As I said, these players can win if I let them win. And as for being more relaxed than he was as a Nippon Ham, he had more pressure on him when he was a Nippon Ham manager. Here it's like, I know what the job is. The players can play and I'm good. What do I got to do? I mean, I have to think about a few things. You know, we got to make a plan, but, you know, the players are going to do all the heavy lifting. What do I got to worry about? I don't have to worry about who's going to get better. I don't have to worry about who's on the farm is going to come. I don't worry about any of that stuff. I don't have to worry about what the team's priorities are.
Yeah, I agree. It's a different animal. I wouldn't say he didn't have as much pressure because he had the weight of the country on his shoulders.
With
the fighters, he only had the fighters fans on his shoulders.
Yeah.
That was bad.
Well, he had the politics.
Everyone had an opinion, yeah.
Yeah, he had the politics in that, you know, you've got an organization telling you six different things and you've got the former players telling you six different things.
Sure, and I could see where it'd be more stressful, but I don't know that there was any less pressure because now you've got everybody talked about.
Yeah, well, I think he took that and he said, okay, this is where I'm going to put my, you know, I'm going to put all my eggs in this basket. And it worked out pretty well. So there was that. And he, with the fighters, he was always kind of that, he was a little bit of that laid back manager. He let guys, if players knew what they were doing and what they wanted to do, kind of let them do it.
Yeah.
He did stuff that was off the wall sometimes, as Masato Yoshi will attest to. And,
his best buddy.
Yeah, indeed.
His best coaching buddy.
I don't think I ever saw a picture of those two standing together.
They were not in the same room, right? They're just in the dugout together.
Yeah.
No, I think they worked well together.
They did.
You know, we could talk about this all night.
No, I'm good.
We're probably going to touch on it again somewhere down the line. I know you got some interviews that we want to play when we have those lulls in interviews along this season. Hopefully we'll be able to get out to parks and talk to the import players, like somewhat similar to before. But anyway, we're going to make that fourth team transition. Congratulations to Japan.
Yep.
And thank you for an exciting tournament. And my goodness, you had Pedro Martinez thanking you for Ohtani did have thanking you for playing and doing it so well. And obviously the Angels have this huge draw, and it's going to be interesting to see how bad or how good the Angels can be this year. It's going to be really fun. But we are going to make that four-seam transition, and I'm going to call this the Trevor Bauer Sour Hour because I think there's some people who are sour about on him, on the fact that he is here, given what the Japanese media seems to either not care about, not know about, or not want to discuss. Pick one. Right after
I'm going to choose C because beat writers are encouraged not to
stir
take teams to task for anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can tell you this story. When I was in Nagoya running my paper, a player was signing with a team that was in Aichi, a basketball team, and I hadn't heard much about the player, so I was doing my due diligence, and I looked up on the internet, and this is back in the 90s, the mid to late 90s, and I found there was very little information on the internet. There was no Google. There was Yahoo and some other search engines. But
Netscape, man.
Yeah, and I found that this player had gotten into some trouble and had been arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I contacted a guy I knew with the team, and he begged me. He said, man, please don't say anything about this to, you know, and let this out to other news organizations. They probably don't know about it, and we want to keep it that way. And I'm like, I said, I can't do that. I said,
no, of course you can't.
Sorry. I've already found the information, so I'm going to publish it in my paper. Now, the good thing about that is not many of these entities out there look at my paper, but I'm going to publish it. I can't put the rabbit back in the hat. You know, it doesn't work that way. So I don't know what's going on, but listen, I want to say this first. We don't know what happened between Trevor Bauer and the woman who accused him of all the things she accused him.
No, we do not.
I haven't read the entire report. I was too disgusted. I don't like talking about guys' bedroom activities in a podcast when we're talking about baseball. It really doesn't matter. And as we talked about before, when we get to talking to these players, they all have something going on. I shouldn't say they all. A lot of them have something going on with something somewhere. And, you know, it's my job not to care and to look the other way. Some publications and some places like that kind of thing. I don't. But whatever happened with Trevor Bauer and this woman happened, and he was essentially not offered the opportunity to play with the Dodgers for the rest of the season.
But get paid $22 million.
Get his money. I mean, he had a huge contract with the Dodgers.
That's right. He's still getting paid $22 million by the Los Angeles Dodgers this year.
Right, and so and then other teams didn't want to hire
pay him $700,000. They wouldn't pay him $700,000 to put on their uniform.
Right, and I think the headline I wrote for the story was that. That Trevor Bauer finds a safe haven in Yokohama, something to that effect. So, or a safe place. He found a safe place in Yokohama.
Safe haven is probably a good port in the storm, maybe.
Yeah. So, so whatever happened, you guys can look it up. But apparently, the Japanese media doesn't want to either deal with it or just is not rocking the boat. So, whatever happened, happened. I don't know. But we talked about the fact that Bauer would probably end up with the Giants or some other team that was going to offer him a lot of money and or was going to be desperate or whatever. And it was kind of a shocker that it was ended up being DeNA, because this club really hasn't been a needle mover team when it comes to big name signings, and it really hasn't spent a heck of a lot of money on free agents and imports. So
it could after be this big one, they might want to check and see where those needles have been.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, we don't know what happened, so I can only quote what was in a report, but you know, was that true or not? We don't know. All we know is it was a problem. It was problem enough for no, you know, MLB team to sign a guy who won a Cy Young and who's a high quality pitcher. And was his last game was a 6-inning stint in June 29th,
2021.
So and that was a win over San Francisco. So and he went 6 innings, but that's, you know, doesn't really matter. It does matter that he hasn't faced live batters since then in a game. And I think even if he did play somewhere with again in Los Angeles, we know there's a good pickup baseball. We talked about it earlier. It's still different ball of wax. And now, you know, I think he's coming to Japan in a place where he can contribute and be effective, but we've seen some pretty good pitchers come to Japan and not, let's say, put up the same kind of numbers or have the win totals or be as successful or be as efficient or have trouble with certain guys. So we'll just have to see. I think he's going to have success, but we haven't seen him in so long. I don't really know what to expect, and I'm sure it's going to take him a while to get into mid-season form, so to speak. But he's coming here, and he has a career, and he has some numbers. So, you know, I did contact Michael Westbay, our in-house Yokohama Bay Stars fan, and he kind of doesn't – it's not that he kind of doesn't watch. He doesn't watch Major League Baseball, so he had no idea who Trevor Bauer was. I don't think he's even motivated to look up and see what the problem is and why he ended up on the Bay Stars. I just think, like a lot of fans, everybody deserves a second chance, and he has one, and they want him to do well for their team. I don't know. Hopefully Michael will respond to this, and we'll hear about it. But I would imagine, you know, if he had joined the Dragons, I'd have mixed emotions, but I would certainly not want him to blow up games for the Dragons. And I don't know about the success part. I just want to see my team do well. So whatever he can contribute to that, I would appreciate. But I don't know. I would have mixed feelings for sure.
I don't really have mixed feelings about it because
we get that.
Because there are things that are public record.
Okay.
And Trevor Bauer has basically lied about things that are public record.
That is something we have heard.
Yeah. Well, he has. Oh, okay. Well, let's go back to yesterday when he had his press conference. And, or was it 2 days ago? I don't remember.
I believe it was
but
2 days ago.
He was asked about to comment on his suspension for violating MLB's policy on domestic abuse, domestic violence, and sexual assault. And he said, I was not. Okay. Well, I'm sorry, Trevor, you were. So that's a lie. There's no getting around the fact that that's a lie. Okay, let's just leave it at that. He said he doesn't want to be tried in the media and that nothing that he was accused of actually happened. But here's the problem. He didn't say that in court when he had an opportunity to deny this woman's allegations. He was accused in court, and his lawyer said, we will accept what she said is true. Okay. He was not in court over sexual assault. They decided to charge him. So his lying now is, she lied, and I was never charged. Therefore, I did nothing wrong. But like I said, he accepted he and his legal team accepted what she said as true. They did not deny it. So he only denies it when he's not under oath. So to me, that's shaky at best. And his argument is you can't believe what people said about me in court because that's just the media. No, it's the court records. So that's also a lie. So I'm a huge believer in second chances. But I also believe, and this would go for Roberto Osuna as well with the SoftBank Hawks, that second chances need to be earned. You can't just shoot a guy and then say, give me a second chance. You can't do something terrible and say, I deserve a second chance. Okay, you do if you earn it, if you show remorse, if you show repentance, if you say, okay, I'm gonna do my best and be a better person. But what we've had in the case of Roberto Osuna was, I'm not talking about it. It's not what you think it is. What we've got from Trevor Bauer is people are lying about me. But what they're lying about are the things that actually, like I said, are official records, such as his suspension. So Trevor Bauer is not interested in the truth. And therefore, in my mind, I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to write about him. I do want to talk to the people with DNA and ask them why they thought it was a good idea to sign him. Now, I'm not saying, you know, they were within their rights to sign him.
Sure.
But they shouldn't be saying, it's okay, everything's great, there's no problem, because we talked to him. I'm saying, basically, from my point of view, DNA is doing something like the basketball team in Aichi Prefecture. They're saying, let's cover up what is known to be true so that our fans won't be upset. And DNA is right now happily hiding behind its non-disclosure. Now, my point is this. Again, he does deserve a second chance if he earns it. If DNA comes out and tells the public, this is what happened, this is the truth, and this is why we believe him, we're willing to give him a second chance. And then it's up to their fans to decide whether, you know, they're going to make a fuss about it, because that's a business. I don't believe people should be boycotted. It's true, he was never convicted of anything. He was not charged with anything. He has been accused by a number of women. But again, that's what I would call about, you know, I wouldn't hold that against him on that. If people know the truth and people are willing to speak the truth, then I'm a little more willing to say, you know, let's move forward and let's go on with baseball. But when it's somebody who has a hard time talking about the truth and a hard time, I mean, and things that are knowable, not rumors, not allegations, but people who deny what is actually known to be true, I have a problem with that. So I do want to find out why DNA thinks it's a great idea. And I'm particularly surprised that the team, the only team in NPB that is owned by a woman, has signed this guy. Yeah, so, and I'm actually curious to hear what other, I have friends who are international directors for a couple of teams in NPB, and I'm very curious to hear what they say about what they thought about Trevor Bauer. So yeah, that's it. But anyway, I wish, I don't wish the team good luck. I wish that I want them to come out and be honest with their customers.
Yeah, and we have seen, I mean, I don't think this is a slam dunk of a great signing in that, like I said, we haven't seen him throw, and we have a long list of quality players who've come over from the States and not found success here.
Sure. Baseball is hard. I mean, just period. Baseball is hard at a very high level. If you go into, you know, if you're an MLB player and you're going to single A and you think you can get by without without trying, you're probably wrong. Japan will crush you if you don't take it seriously. I mean, just as double A will crush you and triple A will crush you and MLB would crush you if you're not taking it seriously. There are degrees of talent at which you can cruise. But there's very few people who can get by with that for very long.
Okay, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we got an email from Ian in Texas, and he says, "Greetings, JBW gentlemen. Is Hanshin skipper Akinobu Okada's public criticism of new imports' performance in spring training simply a difference in management style from Akihiro Yano, or is it Okada's way of preemptively affirming the Hanshin mantra about imports failing the organization? Will this ultimately help imports adjust to MPB/Hanshin or reinforce negative expectations? Looking forward to the new season and the JBW podcasts as well. P.S. Hanshin will finish first this year." Jim, what do you think about all that?
Well, I think they very well likely might finish first this year. I don't know. I don't know if it's Okada's, you know, he's his own guy and he does what he wants to do. He pretty much says what he thinks. I don't think it's a thing to do with the Tigers, you know, the fact that he's, I don't think he's sucking up to the media or, you know, cursing the guys. I think he basically wants to just be honest with them. He had a decent track record with his import players when he was manager before, as I recall. I don't think it's a particularly big problem. I think he's a pretty straight shooter, which is a problem, which is hard to do if you're a Tigers manager. Because there's so many people you have to suck up to. But I think he's a straight shooter, and I think it's just a matter of his just being honest about their performance.
Yeah, I mean, preemptively affirming the Hanshin mantra about imports failing the organization. Look, they have in recent years. I can't say that it is Joe Gunkel has been probably one of the most successful pitchers we've seen in terms of imports with the Tigers recently, but Robert Suarez pitched really well and got a major league gig after pitching there. And you would, you know, think that he was terrible here in some respects. He didn't, you know, he saved some games. He wasn't the ultimate stopper or anything. He, you know, he made his messes here and there and then got out of them. But, you know, criticism can come in as constructive criticism, or it can come as needling. And I don't know what comments specifically you're referring to in this case, Ian, but I would just say that any kind of criticism that goes into the public arena is something I would probably shy away from, unless I've already talked to the player about it and he knows it's coming. So I don't know if that's Akinobu's, if that's Okada's style or not. My guess is that it is, because we haven't, like Jim said, as Jim mentioned, we really haven't heard problems in terms of his handling of import players in the past. So that if he says something publicly, he's also said it to the player himself. And if that's the case, if I'm a coach or if I'm a player and the coach has a problem with something that I did and he tells me about it and he tells the media about it, I'm fine with it. If he only tells the media and doesn't talk to me about it, then I have a problem. And to be honest, the players know as well as the coaches what needs to be done and what work is not being done. So it's no surprise to either party. It's just the way you handle the delivery to the public. So, great. Yeah, I would have to say that it's constructive criticism and that the players know for now until it begins to be a problem, if it's chronic. And if it's chronic, the players are going to be on the farm anyways. It really won't matter. I did see some former players in a round table discussion talking about who was going to win, what team was going to win the Central League, and it was Akihiro Akaboshi.
Akaboshi.
People who think in Romaji or English characters, you're so lucky, because if you're thinking in kanji and you're looking at the kanji in your head, you're thinking Akaboshi, not Akahoshi, because the first person I met with that kanji.
Well, next time I see him, I'll tell him to pronounce it the way you want him to.
Exactly, yes. Tell him, because the first person I saw with that, the first person I met in the 90s with that kanji was Akaboshi. And to change it in my head to Akahoshi is still a process.
Don't be changing John's head. We like it.
Yeah,
the way it
man,
is.
Leave my head alone. Stay out of my head, first of all. But anyway, Akahoshi was the only one of these six panelists who picked the Tigers to finish first. So that should tell you all about what the thought of the Tigers this season, because a lot of these guys did not pick them to finish first. And I want to, because I think, again, their pitching is really going to be what it normally is. I expect it to be the steady part of the team. It's the offense I'm kind of concerned about. But anyway, we did have another comment from Glenn, our buddy Glenn in Tokyo, via email. And it was about Trevor Bauer. And he said, on Bauer, as a Dodgers fan, at least we do not have to see him in that uniform again. Well, sometimes those Bay Star uniforms can look a little Dodgery. especially when they go down to Chunichi and both sides have the blue jerseys and the white pants. It gets really confusing. But anyway, because that's the way the Dodgers kind of look in the preseason. But look, the one thing I didn't say just now in the discussion about Trevor Bauer is he has been known to be a little bit eccentric and unique as a personality. So, I don't really think that he's going to come over to Japan and change all that. And if, you know, a bad person is a bad person. Good people make mistakes. Bad people chronically make bad decisions. And so if he's a bad guy, he's not going to stop doing it when he comes over here. So whatever happened before will happen again. So either he's going to be here and find a way to change that behavior, or he's going to come here and be the same guy he always has been. And it could be worse in Japan. You get in trouble in Japan. We've seen some people have issues with the law. Let's call it issues, and they're gone. You know.
I would venture to guess that if he does have trouble with the law, if he has the wrong kind of relations with somebody who's willing to stand up for themselves, consensual or else, that the Bay Stars will suddenly say, look what we found. He had all these problems in America. We're getting rid of him today.
He will be
out of the country before people have a chance to finish reading the article in the newspaper the next day.
That is true. That is true.
Because there's nothing like, I mean, that is the fastest extra exit you can make.
Yep. One other thing, Glenn did mention that he enjoyed seeing. He was one of the persons who emailed and said, when are you going to put the video up on the YouTube channel. And I said, as soon as Jim can edit it, because he handles that stuff for us. So I sent a couple messages to Jim as nudges, and Jim got it done and we got it up. And Glenn said, man, I love your revolving jerseys behind you in the background. And my wife has been complaining about the jerseys. She's like, that looks like you just left the laundry out. And I said, no, it doesn't. I
said, I'm glad she said it, not me.
Then she says, I said, no, it doesn't. For baseball fans, that's cool. And so I had to run and show her the email from Glenn and said, see? So I got a see moment. Of course, that never really bodes well for you, for us as men. Don't ever do that, guys. That doesn't get you any points. It takes away from all your point total, you know, and whatever your point total is, it makes it zero, if not minus. So I don't recommend you do that, but I did it. I had to get that in there. So thank you, Glenn, for that. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn.
All right. I can't believe after all this excitement in the baseball world, we're going to have a whole season to go.
Oh, man. That is both terrifying and just incredibly cool.
Yeah, both at the same time. You're correct. But games start the same day. We got Major League games on the morning of Friday here in Japan, and then MPB starts on Friday night. I'm excited
to see. Actually, MPB starts on Thursday.
I did see that.
In Sapporo. Or I should say in Kita, Hiroshima, Hokkaido.
All 12 teams are in action on the 30th. But yeah, we do have that opening special game in the stadium that looks like that's not true either. Because in the Pacific League, we only have two games.
Five, on the because 30th. The Eagles and Fighters will play Thursday and then pick up again on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, so we don't even have that. So they mixed and matched it. And you can tell that I've looked at the schedule, but...
we know you have, but you know.
Yeah, well, a long time ago. Trust me, a long time ago. But we're gonna have baseball, so that's gonna be awesome, and it'll be fun to get everything going in Japan. And I, you know, have seen the Escon Field looks a lot like Safeco Field. It has that feel to it in Seattle. So our buddy MPB Reddit up in Hokkaido must be loving that. And that looks like a fun stadium that I just would want to go and walk around on the grounds of.
I wanted to go, but I was going to go on my own dime, but I felt like they, you know, they just spent a few dollars sending me to Miami. If I went to Sapporo on my own dime, I would be having to take days off, and it's not a good look when, you know, they just invested in your writing and then just no, I'm gonna skip opening day, guys. You do it. So as much as I was intended to go, I'm not gonna be there.
All right, well, we've got baseball, we've got Major League Baseball starting on Friday too, so Ohtani's going to be throwing, so we get more of him, so that's going to be fun. So look forward to the weekend of baseball, look forward to MPB starting. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on the Facebook page with criticisms, suggestions. We are going to be doing as much as we can in terms of getting interviews. Bear with us. We're going to have to play some of the older interviews when we don't get fresher ones, but we'll be doing the best we can. That's all I can guarantee you.
All the teams are not open for media business as usual yet, but we're moving in that direction, I hope.
Yep. All right, people, we've got baseball this weekend, so enjoy your baseball.
See you at them ballparks, new or otherwise.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.